The following is a live recording from the 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference at the University of Idaho. It was prepared for the UI Women's Center by Yin Radio. Yin Radio is a weekly syndicated radio program featuring women's voices and women's stories. It is available through KRFP Moscow, Idaho, and via podcast at yinradio.org. Additional presentations from the Athena Women's Leadership Conference can be found at the UI Women's Center website, www.students.uidaho.edu/womenscenter. The following presentation, Women Entrepreneurs, Taking the Leap into Leadership, is by Rhonda Abrams, syndicated columnist, best-selling author, and popular public speaker.
Good morning, everyone. I think we're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Brenda Heldling. I work at the university in the Provost and Executive Vice President's office. Been here for 17 years, for those who don't know me. I'm also a member of Athena and a board member as the member at large. Not entirely sure what that means, but I think it means that I'm your resource. So if you would like to find out anything about Athena and join Athena or have an issue presented to our group, please feel free to grab me sometime here at this session or anytime on campus and talk to me about it. Today I have the pleasure of introducing our guest speaker, Rhonda Abrams. She is leading us in our workshop, Women Entrepreneurs Taking the Leap into Leadership. Yesterday, Rhonda launched the University of Idaho's new Wells Fargo Entrepreneurship Speaker Series with a dynamic talk down here in the Whitewater Room. Rhonda is a USA Today columnist and best-selling author. She spent more than 15 years advising, mentoring, and consulting entrepreneurs and small business owners. Rhonda's knowledge of the small business market and her passion for entrepreneurship have made her one of the nation's most recognized advocates for small business. Her business, The Planning Shop, is a publisher of best-selling books and software for entrepreneurs and small business owners. Rhonda will be presenting a full program, but time will be made at the end of the workshop for any questions and discussion. I'd also like to take this opportunity to remind you to fill in the evaluation form that was handed to you and turn it into us as you leave the room. And thank you very much for coming. Welcome, Rhonda.
Thanks. Actually, I want to make this much more of a workshop and an interactive time for us to talk together. Can you all hear me back there? I forgot my remote control here. I packed it away already, so I'm going to be closer to here. But if I stand behind there, I'm afraid nobody will see me. Nobody probably noticed, but I'm short. So this is a subject obviously close to my heart. I am, you may have noticed, a woman. And more importantly, I have been very committed to the women's movement and to women's issues for most of my life. And so it's really a chance for me to interact with women leaders of today and tomorrow. So let me ask you a question before I get started. How many of you are entrepreneurs now? How many of you want to be entrepreneurs one day? Most. How many of you are students? Many students? Not many. And staff of the university? Most of you. Okay. Good. So we're going to talk a little bit about leadership that could be effective both in an entrepreneurship setting, an entrepreneurial setting, but also even in your own work as an employee and in your career, because one of the things that's really that I'm very much aware of is, and we'll talk specifically about it, is how much your own attitudes about yourself, your own vision, and of who you can be and of what women can be really shapes your own destiny. And it's going to sound, I know I have a little mic and could be walking around, but it's going to sound a little Oprah-like. What's that, the secret, you know, ask, believe, receive. And I'm much more concrete than that. I was telling Linda Morris, who is head of the entrepreneurship program here, which you should all know about. If you're interested in entrepreneurial ventures and becoming an entrepreneur, they have one of the most innovative programs I've seen, and I see programs all over the country, if not over the world. So you have a really good program right here on campus. You should take advantage of it. Can staff members get Do they get free tuition?
Or subsidized?
Yeah, so probably stepping on toes here. So you should take advantage of some of that. All right, let me see if I can just move this around a little bit. Yeah, okay, there we go. No, it's okay because I'm going to talk to people. So I just say that you should feel free to interrupt me. This is a workshop and it's not a speech, and I'd really rather have a dialogue about issues that you're facing, issues you're thinking about, having a chance for us to really chat about it. So the first question I have to say is, as you're thinking about leadership, we've all heard the term role model. It's truly, truly important. I'm bit older than I look, she said modestly. I'd like to believe that I tell myself. But I'm of a certain age when women were first starting to really think about some of these issues. And I went looking for role models when I was in my 20s, and I went to the bookstore looking for biographies of famous women. This wasn't that many years ago, and so I went down to the biggest bookstore in downtown San Francisco. This was a giant. They had a huge biography section, and they had biographies of a number of women, only one of whom was not a movie star. And that was the anthropologist. I'm drawing a blank. I can't remember her name, but it shows you how much I know. But when I was a little girl, there was a whole series of biographies of women, and I think that helped shape me. And yet here I was, you know, in my 20s, looking for role models, saying, who were people out there? And there weren't many of them. You know, little girls are being taught a lot. The book was filled with, let's grow up to be a movie star, instead of let's grow up to be head of the movie studio, you know? Or the person who's actually controlling it, or the agent, or the other kinds of people that women could be. And how you see women and how you see yourself is really critical. So how do you see women? Let's take a look at this. I've got to get over here. Is that a hobby? Or is it an entrepreneur? It could be either. You know, how does that woman see herself? Does she see herself as someone who's, you know, loves jewelry and is going to make some and maybe be a craft, or does she see herself as someone who's going to, you know, one day have her stuff in Bloomingdale's or be worn on TV shows and all that? How she sees herself is going to affect what she puts into her business. You know, glass blowing. Is she the next Chihuly? Chihuly's from this, not too far from here, right? How do you see yourself? And a lot of women are interested in the arts, but there's you know, art, and then there's entrepreneurial artistic adventures. What's this woman? Is she a pet sitter? She could be. Is she a veterinarian, perhaps? Or is she a venture capitalist? She happens to be an extremely wealthy venture capitalist. And here, for you ladies, you know, here's a woman. Is she self-employed or head of a 250-person consulting firm? And how about these? High school principals or university presidents? They're all university presidents. And I'm showing you these pictures because you have to start having pictures in your mind of who you think you can be. And it does help shape our actions, our confidence levels, our persistence, and what we are willing to do to get to places in our lives. So how do you see yourself? What's inside you? That kitten or that mountain lion? Or as my brother said, well, I think that's a cougar. and I said, well, maybe we don't want to use the word cougar here. There's other connotations for cougars now for women. I'm assured that mountain lion is also the appropriate name for it. But I think a lot of women think of themselves as pussycats, you know, as kittens. And we have to embrace our inner mountain lion. You know, you have to find that mountain lion, that you have to be tough enough. And I'm not talking about mean. Mountain lions are not as aggressive as people think they are. And successful women aren't as aggressive as people think they are. In fact, one of the things that I think lots of women entrepreneurs, myself included, we want to bring to the workforce are a different value system. And women want to be able to have a transformative effect in that being able to build collegial environments, environments where people feel good about going to work, where they are valued as individuals. Guess what? Those are exactly the kinds of skill sets that are perfect for success in the 21st century business world. And women have those skill sets and can do that. So I'm not saying that to be Lee Iacocca or even Carly Fiorina, but there are women out there who are building collegial business environments who are being very successful. And I certainly try this in my own business. We have a very collegial work environment, and we have a pet-friendly office. I mean, Linda, I don't know if you've heard the dogs barking in the background sometimes when you call. And now we're at the office because I built my business around my values, which is to treat people well, pay them fairly, have them have a voice in the work that they're doing, have a sense that they can accomplish something, say thank you all the time to people, and also, you know, be able to walk to work and bring my dog. And that kind of flexibility, there was. I was at an award ceremony in Boise earlier this year, and the award for, one of the awards for the best business was a woman-owned business in Boise. I don't know which one it is, but it's a big business, and they allow their employees to bring their child to work up until 5 months. So the mothers don't have to leave their kids in childcare up till 5 months old. I've never heard that before. But it was a woman-owned business who was bringing their own values to it, and yet it was a multi. It was, I think they may have had 50 employees. So you can bring some of that sensibility even without changing it. All right. So one of the things I want people to think about is, what does it take to get to the next level in business or your career? And I've sort of thought that for women it takes three things: vision, confidence, and a plan. You have to be able to see yourself some way, then have the confidence to believe that you can make that happen, and then have an action plan to actually turn it into a plan. Now, let's talk about vision a bit. Okay, and I'm sorry I have to keep going back here. The vision, as we said before, is you have to be able to see what you might be. So what I'd like to take, and this is going to sound really Oprah-like, I'd like to do is take 15 seconds to have you close your eyes, 30 seconds, and I want you to envision yourself in some level of success that you see for yourself, that you'd like for yourself, that perhaps you think is beyond you. Go ahead, close your eyes. Just envision yourself. Perhaps it's owning a business. Perhaps it's being president of this university. Perhaps it's being a public speaker. Perhaps it's having a craft that you're selling, and it's, you know, in Martha Stewart magazine, or you're on TV. Whatever that vision is, I want you to first have that vision. Okay, you can open your eyes now. Keep taking time to have a vision for yourself, because it's really important to be able to see yourself that way. And that, you know, that is the beginning for it. Somewhere or another, I had a vision that I could be more than, you know, just a consultant in San Francisco, which is how I started. I started writing a little column in little local newspapers to try to get business. And through a friend, I met someone who worked at USA Today. And I had the confidence, and you'll see I have a lot of confidence, but not as much as you think. I mean, you know, there's still that pussycat somewhere in me. I'm allergic to cats, so that's probably not the best. Should have put a little puppy dog in it, you know. But so I met the man who was the editor, their business editor for the whole news service for Gannett and USA Today. And I met with him and I said, are you going to do a small business column? You know, I'd like to do, I have written one. I had to have a vision that I could be a small business columnist for a newspaper like USA Today and for a news service like that. And he said to me, we're going to do one of these. We're going to do a small business column. I'm just not sure when. And so I said, because I could envision myself, and when he said, I'm just not sure when. I didn't say, okay, well, let me know if you do. I said, may I keep in touch with you until that time? It took me 4 years. Every 6 months, I called him for 4 years. And one day, he picked up the phone. He said, remember I told you someday we're going to do it? That day has arrived. He said, we need proposals from different people. And we're looking at them. But I can tell you, all you have to do is put something on paper, and you've got the job. So I wrote the proposal knowing I had it. Because I had that confidence that came first from having a vision. And certainly, as an entrepreneur, and Linda can really back this up, the first step in sitting down and thinking about a business that you want to start is having a vision of it. Before you have a plan for it, before you do a feasibility study, before you do any of those other kinds of things, you have to have a vision of what it can be. Now, a vision is more than a dream. I mean, I take the new book, I sort of go from a dream to a vision to a concept to a plan. Because you do have to go through those different steps, but it does start with a vision. I mean, a dream is a little bit more, you know, a dream is this fantasy. You know, I might dream, you know, it might have something to do with George Clooney. That isn't a vision, that's more of a dream, you know, and there are dreams like that. But moving on from those, having a vision of who I want to be, that is something that I actively try to cultivate as I move on to new projects or new stages in my own entrepreneurial career. So that's the first thing. And then it goes into confidence. And here is something I want you to never forget. All right? This is going to help you a lot. What I'm about to tell you will help you for every job hunt you're going to do from now till the rest of your life. I had a friend who was a had her own business doing sort of personnel consulting. What she did was that for businesses, she would get hired she wasn't an employment agency, but they would hire her to run the ad, screen the people, and bring the three or four finalists that the owner of the business wanted to see, so that it would save a lot of time for the businesses in doing all of that, but businesses that didn't want to use employment agencies. It was good business. She had a very good business. She had it for a number of years, and she said, Rhonda, over the years that I've done this, I've learned something. She said, if I run an ad, and I list 10 qualifications that I want in a job, we're looking for, you know, paralegal, or we're looking for, you know, somebody to be the marketing director or whatever. If I run 10 qualifications in the ad, here's what will happen. If a man has one of those 10, he'll apply. If a woman is missing one of the 10, she won't apply. Ladies, if you've got one of the 10, from now on, apply. Right? You've got to turn that upside down. Remember that. A man, if he has one of those, will apply. A woman, if she's missing one, won't apply. We're our own worst enemies in that situation. And I remembered that when I met a friend. I was living at the top of a very high hill in Northern California, and I had been working for probably a year to be able to bike up that hill. We're talking about a long, long hill. And I was in really good shape, and I just couldn't make it all the way up that hill. It was really... And I was talking to a friend of mine, a male friend of mine in New York, who said he could make it. I said, no, there's no way you could make it up this hill. So I bike around Manhattan. I said, yeah, that's Manhattan. It's flat. You know, come. He said, no, I can make it. So he came out on a visit. We got on bikes, got on the bike, bottom of the hill, and we both started biking up the hill. He stopped three or four times on the way up the top of the hill. By the time he got to the top of the hill, he said, see, I told you I could make it. And I went, boy, definitions of success are very different if you're a male. All right, so we have one, we have two. Let me give you episode three, all of which shows how men think differently than you people in this room and how you've got to change, how you internally have that confidence level to change. And as we develop our books, from the planning shop, and we do books on entrepreneurship. As we develop them, we do a process that's used in software development, and you may know about this, where we have personas. It's a process where instead of thinking about just your target market and let's say they're college-age students, women, you know, who are interested in sports, we'll come up with, you know, Jennifer, we'll come up with a persona of who the person actually is, and then we'll sort of develop what is, you know, Jennifer, and she's playing soccer, and she's doing this. You develop a persona of somebody who you can really start to think about. It's a very good way to help you think about your product in more concrete terms. So we were doing our personas for our book on finding an angel investor in a day to help people who are trying to raise money from investors, from private investors. And the major persona were males in their 30s who were probably technology males and going to go out and try to raise money from angel investors for their social networking site or for their other kinds of site. And all of us in the room at the time were women. And we were thinking about what kinds of questions, what kinds of concerns would be on the heart, on the mind of, you know, Larry, you know, or Tom technologist, you know, who's trying to do it. And we, the women, said, well, one of the concerns might be that the investor would think it's not a good idea. And one woman said, no man's going to think that. And we said, well, of course. You know, an investor might just not think thinks an idea. She said, no man's going to think that. So we brought in a couple of guys. Not one of them thought that. Not one of them thought that. All the women thought that, but not one of the men. So believing in ourselves, you know, if we are taking ourselves out of the running before we walk in that door because we are missing one of those 10 things that we need. If we're taking ourselves out of that running because when we go to present to the investor, we think they may be sitting there thinking it's not a good idea. If we don't have that kind of confidence, we are putting ourselves at a real disadvantage. So success starts with you. Success starts with how you see yourself. And it sounds Oprah-like and Secret Life, and I'm not that kind of person, but in reality, that is really critical. You have to believe that people are going to like you, to think you're capable, and to believe that your ideas are going to be able to succeed and that you can succeed. And that is one of the necessary ingredients for success. So giving yourself those little pep talks and believing in it is actually, you know, a critical part of it. So there's a quote in here from somewhere I've got. All right, so, can you toot your own horn? This is where women have a hard time. How many of us, and you can probably think of her as I mentioned it, how many of us know a woman who we think brags about herself too much? Come on. You all know her, right? You know her, right? What's she like?
She was very competitive. It was a high school or a college sweet mate. Always asking, what did you get in this grade? Well, you know, how's your grade this semester? Do you want to go play tennis? Very competitive.
And you felt like
Christmas letters. Yeah.
Okay. Those. Christmas letters. Christmas letters. All my children have gotten into Harvard. Uh-huh. We've just bought our new mansion on the north side of town, and the Rolls is being delivered any day now. But none of us like those people. We all feel like that's, that's really uncomfortable when we hear women doing that. And we have to learn how to do this in a way that's a little more subtle, but still being able to do it. Because you know what? You're going to be, as an entrepreneur or as somebody who is walking in for a job promotion or someone who's trying to sell something, you're going to be walking in and you're going to have to be able to say, I can do this. You have to first say it to yourself, but you're also going to be able to have to say it to someone else. So you have to find mechanisms for doing it. You know, one of them is, you know, having testimonials on your website from people who say great things about you.
You've been listening to a live recording from the 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference from the University of Idaho. Women Entrepreneurs, Taking the Leap into Leadership is by Rhonda Abrams. Now back to the workshop.
One of the things that I tell people when they're networking, you know, the networking for jobs or networking for clients, is go with someone else so that The other person can toot their horn for your horn for you. So if you're going, let's say you're an interior designer and we're going to go to this women's networking thing, you and I go ahead of time and we make a plan ahead of time so that, you know, Tara, I'd like you to meet my friend Gretelin. She's an interior designer. She's a fabulous interior designer. You should see that she did some of the things for my home. The colors, I get so many compliments. You're really great. I really love her. I know it embarrasses you, Gretelin, but it's great. It's a good strategy for being able to have it. But you know what? Gretelin asked me ahead of time to do that. You know, you have to have the confidence to say, Rhonda, I'm going to this. I need you as my wingman. You know, here's your job, and I'll do it for you. It's an easier way to do that. I'll tell you another way to do it, that I watched a woman who is an extremely successful public speaker. This is a woman who for many years aggravated the heck out of me. Really did. She's booked all year round. She is a completely, totally booked public speaker, makes a great living on doing it. And ask me what she talks about. What is her subject or area of expertise? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. She was a hairdresser. A hairdresser decided she wanted to become a public speaker. She felt she had learned a lot about people being a hairdresser. She wanted to be a public speaker. She's extremely successful. And she always aggravated the heck out of me because I thought, you know, I do public speaking. I'm doing some of it now, but it's not my living. But I thought, you know, people aren't picking up the phone and asking me right and left, and I can actually talk about something. You know? I mean, and this woman is a big personality, and when she's in the room, you know, you feel like you just want to shrink into nothing, and she feels like a caricature. And then I watched her do a two-day, I signed up for a two-day program on public speaking, and she was one of the major speakers. And by the end of it, I thought, I really admire her, and I actually like her. Because I learned she tooted her own horn. She would toot her own horn by complimenting other people. She'd say, you know, when Kathy and I were working on this project, and Kathy was great. Kathy and I had speaking engagements together, and even though, you know, that was Kathy's first speaking engagement, and I'd had 20 that year, you know, was fully booked, Kathy really wowed those people. So you're talking about yourself at the time that you compliment people. And complimenting, even when you're not talking about yourself, if you're successful, by complimenting other people, it creates less of that, I'm only interested in me. So is it
Q?
Q. So Q, what's this other girl's name?
Kim.
Is she here today?
No. Okay.
Kim. Oh, we could have picked up a name. That's a fake name. Kim is a fake name. When Q, if Kim was talking to you and saying, you know, the roles is coming, whatever, and Q, I'm so proud of you. You know, I mean, I just think about you all the time, and I'm so proud that you're now moving forward. If the compliments come back, it's much less aggravating, you know. And you don't like Rolls Royces anyway. They're very stodgy old cars, and who would want one? You can tell her about your Beamer, you know. But we do have to learn how to do this. You know, the women are taking leadership roles like never before in our society. I mean, we've had a presidential candidate and a vice presidential candidate, and you know, they're moving up, not as fast as we'd like. I just saw a list. Wall Street Journal is having a list, right after the election, 100 CEOs come to a national meeting to talk about policies for the next president. I counted all the women out of the 100 CEOs, and all three of them that were coming, you know, you sit there and you go, yeah, so here we can go. We don't have a top dog syndrome. So here was a, that's one of our problems. You've got to ask for more and believe you're worth it. You know, Almost any large corporation will tell you they like hiring women because they're cheaper. Work harder, probably less trouble, and they're cheaper. So you have to believe in your own worth, and you have to be willing to ask this. And let me tell you, it never gets easy. It never gets easy. And the way you have to do this is by trying to find out what the market will bear and ask for the top amount of and the top level of the market. You know, how many of you, are any of you faculty members? Okay. Well, I guess this started young with me, because I remember in eighth grade, there used to be a period of time when teachers were like, tell us the grade you think you deserve. Remember that phase?
Yes.
Is it over?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that a phase over?
No.
I know. Teacher, you still do. And I thought the only right answer to that as a student is A. There's no way in which, you know, because if you say what I deserve is an A, and the teacher's thinking, but she's a C student, but she thinks she's an A, you know, maybe she really is struggling and she's really working hard, and I just don't recognize that yet. You know, maybe she is working harder. And if they were already thinking of you as, you know, if you put down a B, you know, what it benefits you? It always benefits you to ask for the A, right? You know, as a faculty member, if I was a C student and I put down a C, you'd say, sure, I'd get the C. If I said I'm an A, you might move me up to the B, or B minus, thinking, well, maybe, you know, she's trying hard. There's only benefit for it. Same thing when asking for a raise or asking for dealing with a client. I mean, obviously, you can ask for so much, especially when you're looking for a, you know, if you're dealing with a client and you're putting in a bid for a business, you know, for a business, that they just think, well, you're out of our price range. But, you know, I just hired somebody the other day who's making a lot more money currently, and I was saying, in this economy, and, you know, how many of you heard the word chutzpah? Mm-hmm. You know the word chutzpah?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should, not, chutzpah you need to know and you need to actually have. You know, chutzpah is sort of the, what is guts to do things. So there was a woman who came in, she wants to start her own business, she's working for a very large, well-known, you'd know the name of the company, Silicon Valley company, and she came highly recommended, but she wants to start out on her own, and I knew she was getting paid a lot more money, and when we sat down and we talked, and it was clear I wanted her to come do some work for me, I said to her, you know, let me tell you, before you tell me how much you charge an hour, I'm not going to pay anywhere near that. You know, you're not going to make anywhere near that here. So let me tell you what I offer you instead. And, you know, so I told her all that stuff, and she said, you know, and I said, so how much do you want? And it was double what I'm, literally double what I'm paying her. We went back and forth, and she said, well, do you think you'll ever be able to go up to this or whatever? And a couple times I said, no, I don't think I'm going up to that, whatever. It was an honest exchange between two business people, and I had the confidence to say, this woman will get more from me than just a dollar amount, and there's other ways to structure this. And she was able to adjust that and turn to me and say, it's worth it to me as I'm starting my business to do this. So there was a lot of confidence in that room, and we both walked out liking one another enough. But she had the confidence to tell me that hourly rate at that level. I don't think worse of her for it, you know. And it does let me know sort of psychologically, you know, where I need to be thinking about moving her. It actually made me think better of her rather than worse. You know, if she had come in, if she'd come in with a dollar figure $5 less than I'm paying her an hour, I would have jumped on it. I mean, she's never going to get more than she asked for. And that's really true. You're never going to get more than you ask for. A lot of women think that's the case. Here's something you need to think about is becoming the conductor instead of the first violinist, especially in an entrepreneurial setting. Entrepreneurs like to start things and like to build things and like to create things, and particularly women entrepreneurs. Can anybody tell me some of the kinds of, who are already in business? What kind of businesses do you have? Yeah?
Photographer.
You what?
Photographer.
Photographer, okay. Anybody else who's in business?
I've been a freelance translator for 12 years.
Freelance?
Translator.
Translator?
Freelance writer.
Freelance writer?
I'm a bakery and I also have a sewing business.
A bakery and a sewing business, okay.
Beekeeping?
Beekeeping. There's a new movie out, just opens today, right?
I don't know.
Secret Life movie, everybody's told you that.
Yes.
Opens today, Queen Latifah. By the way, as an aside, an incredible story of her in the New York Times Magazine a couple of weeks ago as a great businesswoman. So you may want to look at that. You know, Queen Latifah. Very, yeah.
After school language program.
After school language program. Anybody else? And how about some people who want to start businesses one day? What kinds of businesses?
I want to start an engineering company. I'm a product engineer, but I'm not an engineer.
That's all right. You know, the woman who's speaking all over the country doesn't have any expertise either, and she's going to go on. Can you hire engineers? Do you know what to look for? Then you can. That's good enough for me. I like that attitude. You go, girl. I think I'll be a tightrope walker. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about it, and I'm scared of heights. But no, no. But no. You, good for you. All right, engineering firm.
Stained glass is a hobby. I'd like to make it a business.
Okay, so I want you to think about a couple of steps. When we were talking about the moving of the, and I took a slide out of here, but I want you to think about this. I want you to think, as you're thinking about your businesses, I want you to think on a progression, on going from vision to confidence to plan, we talked about. But I also want you to think about going from a plan for your business. And most of you are thinking of creating an income, finding a business that will create an income for you. And I say, you go, girl. You know, if you can create your own income, that's terrific. But a few of you, I'm looking at you with the engineering firm, looking at you with maybe beekeeping, I'm looking at you maybe with any one of you, you know, the bakery, anything, think going from income to wealth. From creating an income to creating wealth. Now, what do I mean by that? As an income, I create a job for myself. If you said I'm an engineer and I want to have an engineering consulting service and I'm going to be an engineer, you know, I want to be an engineer, I might go out and consult to projects, make enough money so that I now can support myself and probably make more money since I don't have a boss. Than I might have otherwise, and put that money, the money I make, I might invest in, maybe not the stock market, but although Warren Buffett says now's the time to buy. So, you know, invest in real estate or annuities or anything else and get my financial well-being from taking the money that I earn and investing it. But I've made an income. The minute I stop working is the minute I stop making money. And by the way, that's where I was in my own life. I was a consultant for 14 or 15 years. I still do some consulting, but I made my income as a consultant. And I made a very good income. By the time I was had been doing it for a while, I was consulting to companies like Chevron and Forest City and large corporations, and I was doing business plans with them. And I, you know, was making over six figures a year, many years in a row. And I said to myself, and the minute I stop working, the minute I don't want to get on that plane, the minute I stop that, not a penny comes in. So I've created an income for myself. I've created a job, but I can't quit this job, you know, without getting another job. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to create a product or a business that keeps generating income even when I'm not working. That was one of the reasons I wrote a book and then I got into publishing. But I want you to start thinking about how do you create businesses that have value to them when you are not working at them. And that's why I like when you said, I want to start an engineering firm. What's your name?
Bridget.
I'm going to pick on you in a good way. I mean, the fact that she said it that way was part of that vision. and was part of that vision. And the part of it, the fact that she's not an engineer, even though her husband is, part of that confidence, you know, to say, I can be, you know, and even better, she said, I want to be president of an engineering firm. I want to own, because she's already seeing all those other little minions working for her. And one of the things that I really emphasize when you're starting your business, and if you're working on a business plan, and I have a very great business plan book that you can buy. See, I'm tooting my own horn there. The best-selling business plan book in the United States. It sold over 600,000 copies. Yes, thank you.
We have two of your books in the bookstore.
Oh, thank you. Two in the bookstore. Yeah, and tooting my own horn again for a second, I know now making me unpopular with this group of women, is one day about a year or so ago, I realized that I've sold over 1 million copies of books, my books. And I thought, that's pretty damn good. Not a lot of people in America can say that, you know? That puts me in a pretty small percentage of people in America, you know? So that was an aside, but it was like, you have to admit it to yourself somehow before you can, you know, it was like, I started thinking about myself differently a little bit when you reach a milestone like that. But back to Bridget. Bridget has got this vision, and one of the things that she's starting to think of, as she starts to think about her business plan, as she starts to do it, as you're starting to think about your business plan for your bakery, as you're starting to think about your business plan for your beekeeping, or photography, which is a much more challenging field in today's world, a very challenging business. As you're thinking about it, I want you to sit down and think about your exit strategy, your exit plan. Very few people starting a business in the early days of the business think about, how am I going to get out of this business? The purpose being is that if you start to think about your business with a goal that one day you are going to sell it, that someone else will buy it, then you will start to think about growing your business differently. Yes?
I'm just curious how you apply your strategies to the nonprofit sector as far as business.
Well, first of all, I was in the nonprofit sector for a long time, and I would first say, in terms for getting business strategies, thinking about it for yourself as a female in the nonprofit sector, I think it's really important to have that kind of confidence. I think most people who look at women in the nonprofit sector, it's sort of like there's a discount of your abilities. You know, when I was in the nonprofit sector, I had a male supervisor say, you know, if you could do anything else, you wouldn't be working here. And that's how he felt about his own employees. And not just the females, but he felt that, basically he felt the people who worked for him, you know, were working for a nonprofit, even though most of them had taken reductions in pay to do it. Many of them were lawyers who could have been working in the private sector. But his feeling was, is if you were working for a nonprofit, it was because you couldn't get employed by anybody better. So the world often brings that to you. So you have to have the confidence already to see yourself differently and to have a compelling reason and a compelling elevator pitch about what your business is so that you can communicate that. And then I think doing a business plan and thinking about that, the value of it, in many of the same ways that you would do it for a business. I don't know that I've never thought about an exit strategy with regard to a nonprofit, and I haven't written a book on nonprofit planning, so I haven't thought through that. One day if I write it, then come bring me back and I'll answer more of the questions about it. But I'm not quite like Patricia. I can't talk completely about things I don't know anything about. although so many people say I do, but I tried not to. Yeah.
Some of your books that you have right now talk about
exit strategy? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because let me tell you something. If you're thinking about your bakery as... And by the way, there's nothing wrong with this. Let me just stop. As you start to think about your bakery and sewing,
your bakery's husband's the baker.
Okay. And something we didn't talk about last night, and I would tell you, we'll talk about a little bit here, is you're going to have to think about your market differently, because you're in a valley with Moscow and Pullman. How many people are in this area? 50,000? for most of you, to have a business that's going to create wealth, with the exception of perhaps real estate development, which isn't doing that well, to do wealth, you're going to have to think about your business in a way in which your market is outside of this valley. But that's okay, too. And so one of the things that I usually do, and we're veering away from a little from the women's stuff, but what I usually talk about is developing a niche that you can own and something that's a specialty that you own. I mean, chocolates with chili is, you know, she would have, you know, your cowboy, I mean, she's clever, whatever. And also there's something unique about it that makes her more likely to show up on the Food Network than somebody who's just doing wonderful chocolates. I worked with, worked not too far from here. I did work a few years ago with the Washington Winemakers Association and had a group much larger than this in which there were wineries from Washington. Many of them were new. And talking about strategic positioning for them and what their competitive advantage. And I asked all of them to tell me what was it that made them special, that gave them their competitive advantage. And Linda, I'm going to ask you, because you'll know, what did all these Washington winemakers say was their competitive advantage over other wine?
Probably the product itself.
The product itself. It's quality. So there was 150 people, all of whom had better quality than the other 149. Right? An indistinguishable trait. I mean, in wine, it's got all this nutsy stuff. You know, but a lot of, I mean, I love wine, and I do this, but I have a friend who's an ultra-premium winemaker, and they spell, you know, their cabs are $100 a bottle. And a lot of it has to do with marketing, folks. But I talked with them, and I said, what if you had a niche? What if you, one guy had barrister wine. I said, what if you had wine for lawyers? It seems silly, right? It seems wine for lawyers. They were two lawyers who had started it. I said, here's your business model. You know, you put, you know, the scales of justice on it, and on your label, it's wine for lawyers, and you start becoming active in the Washington Bar Association, in the Oregon Bar Association, the California Bar Association. You donate the wines for their annual dinners. You take out an ad in their journal. You write for free the wine column in, you know, the Bar Association magazine. Suddenly, you own that market. And, you know, and you do private label. You know, one of the things you offer is when somebody has a big case, you can do private label wines to celebrate their big case. You suddenly have a market you can own. Same thing with women. Wine for women. This was a number of years ago. I was sort of, we broke up. I said, how about wines for the women market, you know? Maybe lighter wines, maybe half bottles, maybe, you know, doing a pink ribbon with certain amount goes for breast cancer. And I talked about that, or wine for the Hispanic market, something that differentiates you. Within 2 years, I'd seen a wine for women thing that has gone skyrocket. Behringer's gotten into it, a number of them, because they realize that there are these kinds of niches.
You've been listening to a live recording from the 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference from the University of Idaho. Women Entrepreneurs, Taking the Leap into Leadership is by Rhonda Abrams. Now back to the workshop.
The point being, in a valley like this, if you're going to try to do a bakery, you know, you can start here and making your, if you're thinking about going from income to wealth, and you're saying, how can I have a bakery that somebody else will buy one day? It's got to be profitable, and it's got to be larger than just your husband baking. And we're not going to do a business plan for you here. Yeah, Linda's going
to... Oh, I just wanted to say, you know, I mean, given the community that we have, online or e-commerce is a way that you can grow. I just read a case about a woman who was, she was cooking dinners, and, you know, and then like a neighbor would say, no, you know, I don't have time to cook because I work outside, so could you kind of make an extra batch for me? And she said, maybe I can just make this where we can have a kitchen, and then I'll provide all the ingredients, and people can come in and cook their meals for the week for their families, because the big deal is, you know, you want healthy meals for your families and all that stuff. So she started moving into this kitchen, and having, you know, her friends come, and they kind of the social thing too in terms of cooking for the week. And then she kind of got beyond that. I mean, that was a neighborhood thing. She said, let's put these recipes out on the internet. And so she's got this huge website now, and it's just gone national in terms of people can go out there and get recipes for it. And they'll have all the ingredients, and then she's worked with distributors now in terms of, you know, you're using organic products and stuff like that, then she's got the warehouse for getting that.
There's tons of opportunities out there if you can find something that you can own and a niche that you can own. And so having an engineering firm that's a general engineering firm may be the way that you want to start off. But as you go, you know, as you develop, you may want to have an engineering firm for doing, you know, what's something that interests you a lot, Bridget, outside of engineering?
Well, some of the devices I thought of, some infant car seat devices.
All right, so you were doing more like product industrial design. So maybe you become an industrial design firm that specializes in children-related products. So that once you have that kind of specialty, you could be getting people even in New York calling you about that, or in the Bay Area, or whatever, who might be then be able to call, you know, because there's a lot of special, that really is a niche you could own, because children have different body sizes, different issues, all the different kinds of things. If you're developing consumer products for children, that you could be an engineering company specializing in that. And in fact, that may be, there your business plan may be right now. So instead of just thinking about designing that car seat yourself, really developing an expertise in what do other industrial designers need to know about designing these products? What do companies need to know? That's something even here in Moscow, Idaho, where there's two Starbucks. even here, you could own that market. So, but here's something that you need to think about. Whether you're a hair, I've really learned a little bit. I'm a writer. If I write, I can write one book a year. If I have a situation where I have a team of writers who work for me, that I'm helping develop the idea, and then they're doing the research, and then they're doing the writing, and I have a project manager who's managing that, and who's editors who are editing it, we can put out 5 or 10 books a year. And that's exactly what I've done. So I've become the conductor instead of the first violinist. And people always ask me, how do you write so many books? I mean, I put out 2 books this year. Next year I'm going to put out 5 at least. So, you know, there is a question about how can you do that? How can you make it productize your skill set? And it's much more challenging in photography, but it can be doable. Mm-hmm. I just don't have the answer for you on that yet. All right. So let's see. But with that, you need to build a team. Okay. So plan. Nice. You have to take your, once you have your vision and your confidence, you actually have to put some concrete planning into it. And part of that is setting some specific goals. Here's one of Rhonda's rules. You can't reach a goal you haven't set. You know, it's absolutely, you know, if I say I'm going to get more exercise this week, that's a good goal. It's not going to happen. Right? If I say I'm going to go out and run 2 hours every day for 7 days this week, that's not going to happen. But if I say, you know, 4 days this week, I'm going to get up early and walk for 40 minutes, that's going to happen. That's measurable. It's achievable. It's got metrics to it. You know, how many of you supervise employees? You give them goals and metrics. Now, how about giving yourself goals and metrics? I've never said this before in front of a group of people, and this is going, it's got to stay between us, all right, ladies? Because I don't want this on the internet tomorrow. So I'm single, and I have another single woman friend who's quite accomplished, and we talked about, well, you know, what can we do to meet more guys, because we're so busy with our careers. And we said, we need a business plan. So we sat down a couple of months ago and gave ourselves measurable objectives of how many meetups we had to have. We're going to write. When then we got really more interested, and we said, let's turn this into a book. Because then it's outside of the social setting. We had rules to it. It's working very well, by the way. Because we said, let's bring the same business skills that we have to our social life. It was like we're going to go run out seven. The first thing was that in the first month we had to have 10 meetups. We went on these websites and whatever. It's surprisingly good. We worked on we edited each other's profiles. We did research on what works. We approached this completely. We did some focus groups by asking a couple of men what they thought about this stuff. I mean, seriously, we said, what if we did this the way we would do a business project? It was remarkably successful, so much so we said, oh, it was too much work. That was too much work. We have to really scale back our ambition. And we created rules with it. There was the mandatory second date rule, because we're, tend to judge people too quickly. So the mandatory second date was unless they were like, there's a fatal flaw. If they wanted a second date, you had to go out on a second date. So we had to do a lot of analysis about, if they were a pedophile or didn't shower, or, anything like that. And then we decided, and I won't tell you what the last fatal flaw was that we decided that was also too, because it's an election season thing, so. but you could sort of guess. In any case, but you know what? The point here, ladies, is let's bring some of those business skills to our own lives, to our own personal goals. I mean, If your goal is to build a photography business or get your writing clientele, you have to put actual, specific, measurable goals with that. You have to sit down with it. My younger sister is a salesperson, and she had, when she was starting her business, she had her 20 business card a day goal and rule. She put 20 business cards in her pocket. She could not go home until she had given out her 20 business cards through cold calling, And,
It's like 10 o'clock. She's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it was, and she's been in business 25 years, very successfully. She's put kids through college. She's got a house with a pool. She's got, takes wonderful vacations. The economy has gotten real bad now, and she's a lot more years. And she's in a small community. We got to wrap it up. And I said, Janice, she said, I'm back to my 20 cards a day thing. Yeah, she said, I'm just not going to let it get to me. So you got to have a goal. You got to have the. I know we got to wrap it up. So we're here 5 minutes. So questions? If we can do it, yeah.
Very beneficial for everyone's health. Uh-huh. However, when I consider, I think about tax. Like, I don't know. I'm from Japan. I heard the tax system is different. Also, what if someone sued me, like an allergy reaction or something? So that comes up. How can I overcome that?
All right. Did you hear what she said? No. What she said is that she's got an idea for a good herbal Japanese tea. She's concerned about the tax system here and whether somebody might
sell everywhere.
If she sells everywhere, the problems with figuring out how the taxing is, and also if somebody sues you, And what's your name? Ikuku?
Komiko.
Moki.
Ikoko? Ikuko, but
Komiko. Koko. Okay. I don't think I got that right. but I think it's a good example. Remember that list of 10 things? If you have one, versus missing one, those are practical issues for you to be able to deal with. Those are not reasons not to have that business. Those are reasons to plan your business. Those are reasons to knock over to Linda's office and say, I need some students to help me work on a business plan for this. Those are not major barriers. If that's what's keeping you from doing it, it's an excuse, not a problem. I mean, those are just minor issues. You know, selling stuff across state lines is very easy to figure out, and there's computer systems can do that. Every single online shopping cart can figure that out for you. It's not a problem.
And I'll just put in a plug for the Small Business Development Center in Lewiston. They'll help you do your business plan for free, and they'll do some marketing research and tell you all about the incorporation stuff that will protect your liability and all of that. And I just wanted to say, too, the herbal tea person and the bee person, if you have stuff you want to sell, I have a contact for you, an e-commerce site out of Northeastern Washington, shopthefrontier.com, and they're coming here on November 6th, and they really want honey.
Well, it wasn't a good honey year, but we, have fun.
And I'm a big believer in portals like that, where there's a portal site to shop local kinds of stuff. So those things shouldn't stop you. I mean, it's easy for me to say, but
just do it.
Use the resources are here for you. Go find the resources. Those are problems that lots of people. Those are not problems. Those are issues. There's a difference between an issue and a problem. That's not a problem. Those are issues, and they're easy issues to deal with, and other people deal with them all the time, and they can help you solve them probably in 15 minutes. So don't let that be a stumbling block. And, you know, because people need, here's the thing you need to understand, people need your tea.
What's wrong? Well, I brush it, wash
it. So that's right. So people need that tea. If you believe in that tea, and that's really important, then you should. Are you going to let the fact that you have to charge tax in one state in the union probably only is get in your way? Or that you don't know it yet? Okay. Well, ladies, I would say just, you know, go out and find that inner mountain lion in you, that inner cougar, and go out there and make your dreams into a vision and make your vision into a plan and make those plans reality. It's all very doable. You just have to believe in yourself. So thank you for inviting. Yes?
Do you have a recommendation of a book related to this topic, since you write so many books?
Well, we have a number of books. Thank you. I'll pay you later. And actually, if you want to give me your cards, people have cards or something? I'll do a drawing. Or write down your name and your email address. I'll do two things. I'll do a drawing for this book right now, and I will add you to our monthly newsletter. It's free. Of business tips, and Linda will come around and collect them, and then just a name and an email address, or a card if you have one, and Brenda's got them, and this one would, by the way, be a very good one. There's also, it's called 6 Week Startup.
She
has one. Oh, you're walking around with it. There you go. And I'll even autograph it for you, thus lowering the value of the book. No. Increasing it. I've got to toot my own horn, right? Thanks very much. Thank you for that very good last question. And Brenda, you can do the drawing once everybody's written it down. Just
hold over your sticky thing.
They're just putting. Yep. And
if you're done with your evaluation, you're watching by chance.
And let me tell you one other thing, one final thing.
She had to put it in there for her. I will double dip. I can't lie. See, I can't even think of a fake person's name.
I'm going to tell you one last thing as we draw for this. Most of us want to make a difference in the world. I think it's true for most people. It's certainly for most women. The one way you know, you absolutely know that you've made a difference in the world is when you've created a business that creates jobs. When you create a good job and treat those people well, you have changed the world. So going out and creating a business that you can grow to employ other people, especially in a valley like this, is your way to change the world. It makes an incredible amount of difference, so I really want to encourage you to do that.
Did everybody put their name in?
All right, Brenda's going to do it. One lucky winner. It's coming.
Everyone?
All right.
Okay.
There we go, and it is?
Our sticking together. It's a sticky note winner. Phew.
She was good to ask for the question. All right, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes Rhonda Abrams' workshop, Women Entrepreneurs, Taking the Leap into Leadership. This production was created for the University of Idaho Women's Center by Yin Radio, a weekly syndicated radio program featuring women's voices and women's stories. You can connect with the Women's Center at www.students.uidaho.edu/womenscenter or by email at wcenter@uidaho.edu. Learn more about Yin Radio and get weekly podcasts of the program at yinradio.org. For Yin Radio, I'm Sandy Billings.